I remember Preacher Greenleaf used to tell a little story, and I'm going to approach my time here today a little differently maybe, because I'm not going to talk so much about prayer, and I don't want you to think I'm not talking about it because I don't think it's important. I do. Obviously, it's where it all begins, but I want to talk about what happens after you pray, because that concerns me a little bit. We need to put some feet into the prayers that we pray. Brother Greenleaf used to say, there was a woman who prayed, and she was a good church-going woman, a wealthy woman, and every day she prayed that God would do something about that tavern down there on the corner. Remember that story he used to tell? Yeah. And he said, she prayed every day about that tavern. Lord, do something about that tavern down on the corner. Finally, she was so distraught one day, the washerwoman was working there with her, and she was on her way out the door, and she said, oh, Maggie, come in and pray with me. She said, we got to pray about that tavern down on the corner. Something's got to be done about that tavern. She prayed with her, and then she left, and lo and behold, the next morning, that tavern was burned plumb to the ground. So here come Maggie back the next day, and this lady says, have you heard? Have you seen what happened? The Lord's done marvelous things. The tavern's gone. She said, well, I don't know what the Lord did, but she said, I just swung by there on my way home, set the thing on fire. We got to put some feet in our prayer. When we pray, we got to expect the Lord to go out and do some amazing things. What about that? And we've got to look for ways that God can do amazing things. I'm not sure if we've got a PowerPoint or not. Oh, we got one. Praise God. Clap. I hate technology. You don't know much about me, and you don't need to know anything about me except I'm the ex-director of Christian Contender Ministries, and I didn't even know that. But I got to tell you a little bit about my style of ministry. You want to understand what I'm going to say. Here's my style of ministry. I pray hard about things, and I seek God to give me some kind of direction. And then after I pray, I don't sit around and wait. I just go, and usually do not know where I'm going or what I'm doing. Now, I kind of feel I'm in pretty good company there, because old Abraham was kind of the same way. Not that I'm anywhere close to him. But most of the time, I have no idea what I'm doing. I just pray that God will do something, and then I just go looking for him to do it. And you know, God is faithful every time when I do that. He is faithful to put something right in my path that I stumble right over. Now, did you hear what I said? I'd like to say I could think it out. I'd like to say I could see it. I'd like to say I was a visionary, but I'm not. What God needs me to do is trip on stuff. What about you? But at least he's given me the ability to, when I trip on something, go, oh, well, maybe that's what you want. My brother-in-law and I have a running joke. Some of you know J.D. Miller, and we've worked together for years, and the running joke is that he calls me up from time to time. He says, so what are you doing today for the Lord? Like, you know, I was doing something different yesterday. Finally, I told him, I said, I'm doing the same thing today I've always done. I'm out just going and tripping over stuff God puts in front of me and just doing it. That's my style. That's what I do. That's all I know how to do. And I want to talk to you about praying and then going and expecting God to do some amazing things in your life. I want to give you some things that you can pick up on. I'm going to tell you this. I go to these conferences and speak for these conferences, and I love to attend them. I try to attend every session. And I just get a teeny bit troubled with listening to people just saying, we need to do something, but nobody ever says what. And a lot of times we don't get any tools. I need tools. I need something to go do something with. What about you? Tell me something I can do. Show me something that me as an average guy going to the church can be participating in so I can make a difference and get something done out here. That's what I'm looking for. And God is still a God who will give us something to do, and he'll do amazing things among us if we'll allow him to do it. My wife's daddy, if he was here speaking, and he spoke here many times, some of you know Jackie Miller, he would start with Ephesians 3:20, and he would say, and now to him who is able to do what? Exceeding abundantly, beyond all that we ask or think. How? According to the power that works in us. Listen, I want to give you another verse that I really like, Joshua 3:5. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves. For tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. How many of you think the Lord is still a God of doing amazing things? Anybody out there? Is he all done? Does he no longer have power? Were the amazing things only 50 years ago or 100 years ago or 2,000 years ago? I'm going to tell you, I believe we serve a God that's doing amazing things today. He's doing miracles today. He's got the same power today he always had. We need to get excited about it. Now look at this verse of scripture, and I don't have time to preach a sermon on it. You take it and preach it. First of all, look, it says, consecrate yourselves. You first of all have to consecrate yourself. Now, King James, I think, says sanctify. Let me tell you how to do that. Three things. You need to separate, you need to saturate, you need to concentrate. Write that down. You need to separate yourself from the world for a time. You need to saturate yourself with God's word, and you need to concentrate in prayer, and that's how you sanctify or consecrate yourself. That's how you get that done. And then it says that tomorrow, listen, get the order right. Get the order right. You consecrate yourself first, and then tomorrow God does the amazing thing. He doesn't do the amazing thing, and then you go out and consecrate yourself. You see the order of that? And sometimes it seems like tomorrow's never going to come, but if we will consecrate ourselves, then tomorrow will come, and then it's the Lord who will do amazing things. I like what George was talking about. We need to humble ourselves and get out of the way. We're not going to do amazing things. God's not going to do amazing things through us. He's going to do amazing things, and we're just going to be part of it. And we need to get that order correct. I want to talk to you about some things that God is doing in an amazing way. And I'm going to open up some jars, and I'm going to spill out some stuff, and I'm not going to even attempt to explain it all or attempt to put the lid back on each jar, okay? I'm just going to sling it out. And I hope when I'm all done, there's a reaction here. When I preach, I like to see a reaction, and I don't care what it is. I don't care if you're mad, sad, or glad. I just hope you react to something before we're done here in the next few minutes. I just want a reaction. I'm not going to try to fix it all. I'm not going to try to explain it all. I'm going to tell you about some prayers that were prayed and about what God did and how he worked amazing things and how you can be part of that. Now, go to the next slide. I was sitting in my office several years ago and I said, we got a problem. The church is not moving. And I said, oh, we got to figure something out. When I was 40 years ago growing up in the church, we had about 1 million members and about 7,000 churches. And now 40 years later, we got about 1 million members and about 7,000 churches. Does anybody see any problem there? We haven't even advanced. The population's tripled in our country since that time. But we still running the same. We can't be proud of that. Something's wrong. So I took a piece of paper and I drew a line. There's adults and there's children. I focus my ministry a lot on children, and I'll tell you why here in a minute, because I think they're still the future. Then change the next slide. And I drew another line, and I said, there's saved people and there's lost people. And then I just put that up, and I said, I'm going to look at that and let God speak to me somehow out of that. I've been in business a lot in my life. When I first started, took over the operation of the Christian Contender magazine, I had no money. My grandpa had taught me some business skills, so I started my own business and did quite well in some network marketing and other kinds of marketing and sales and real estate to support myself. And I worked with a guy one time. He said, the best thing for you to do when you have a business is just draw everything all out, put it up on a wall, and just stare at it. And if you stare at it, it'll talk to you. So I drew that up, that little chart. And I thought, I'd stare at that. Now, the one line's up a little higher because there's more children than adults. The average is 2.8 children for every two adults in the United States of America, so it's a little more. And then I put this line over this way because how many of you would agree there's more lost people than saved people? And so that line really should be way, way over there. But I put that up there, and I said, now let's look at this, and let's see if we can gain any information from this. Go to the next slide. I figured out by looking at this that the saved people up there, which is the smallest category, is responsible for everybody on the board. You see that? They're responsible for everybody. They're responsible for themselves. They're responsible for the children of saved adults. They're responsible for lost adults. And they're responsible for the children of lost adults. Would you agree with that? They're responsible for it all when it comes to doing something about the condition of the world. So I started looking at that, and I said, you know, one of the problems maybe we have, and I'm just suggesting this, I don't want to judge, but one of the problems maybe we have is that the church, the saved adults, are more concerned about themselves than anybody else. We're in a society now where it's all about the comfort. It's all about, what am I going to get from it? How are you going to meet my felt need? It's all about me, 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 me. I want the church to do something for me. And if it don't do something for me, I'm going to go find one that will. I was asked to preach at a church here recently. And I went over there and I walked in. And when I walked into the building, I took a look to the left. And I had to back up and look again. And I went to the deacon that had called me over there. And I said, y'all realize you got a tavern in your church building? He said, what are you talking about? I said, right there, you got a bar. He said, oh, yeah. He said, that's our coffee bar. I said, well, what is that? And it was a separate room with a door that you could go into that looked just like a tavern. Had bar stools, big tables, drink stuff over here. He said, yeah. He said, we have a lot of people who don't like to come into the worship, so they'll just sit in here and they'll get coffee and they'll watch the worship on a big team screen TV and they'll eat a muffin and they're a lot more comfortable that way. Listen, something's wrong with that. I haven't figured out what's wrong with that, but something is wrong with that. You need to be in the worship, participating. We need to not let people have the message that church is about them and their comfort and what they're going to get. And that's what we focused on. Just putting ourselves in a place where we want to be until this whole thing is going to implode one day and we won't even be here. We got to get outside of that. Go to the next slide. So I determined that that group was responsible and it's our responsibility to reach that group. Who would agree with that? Now, I'm not going to give you all the scriptures. You all know that. We're supposed to reach the lost, reach adults. No question about that. I hope you've got an active outreach program at your church. Go to the next slide. We need to recruit that group right there. Here's where we're messing up, in my opinion. And I'm just giving my opinion on the condition of the Lord's church today in the New Testament restoration churches. We have stopped recruiting our kids, and we've started entertaining them. Now, listen to me. You need to learn this. Anybody in the Lord's church that can build a water slide, the devil can build a bigger one. What you win them with is what you win them true. That has always been true and will always be true. We need to get back to recruiting our kids. When your children are 0 to 12, all they do is suck in information. You need to teach them as much as you can. As soon as they hit 13, there's some kind of a switch that goes off in their head that says, I ain't listening to you anymore. So we try to entertain them so they'll come to church. We try to entertain them so they'll come to camp. We try to entertain them so they'll come to revival meeting. And we still don't get them when we do that. Listen, here's the problem. Back when I was growing up, and I hate to say that, our preacher thought by the time you was 12, 13 years old, you ought to be out calling. You ought to be out doing work for the Lord. You ought to be holding hands with somebody, an assistant in a VBS class, not attending a VBS class. We need to recruit that group and say, look, with your help, we can get this done and start on-the-job training with our young people instead of just having them watch movies and slide down slides. That brings us to the next group. Next slide. And I determined by looking at this that we need to rescue that bunch. Now, here's what I'm going to focus on, these children. Do anybody notice that's the biggest block on the screen? Who noticed that besides me? Anybody farm? Who farms? Anybody ever farmed? Anybody know a farmer? Anybody ever seen a farm on TV? Okay, I can relate to you then. If I'm being paid to pick cotton, and they're going to pay me by how much cotton I pick, do I want a little patch? Or do I want a big patch? Somebody answer that question. I want a big patch. When Jesus said the fields are ripe unto harvest, he wasn't talking about that little teeny square up in the corner where most people's already saved. I was speaking down at the Kaya Mission Clinic one time here not too long ago, and I'd just come back from England. And I was over there on a business trip. Long story short, they asked me to preach. I preached. Over 100 people came forward. By that afternoon, we had baptized over 60 people in a swimming pool. I was preaching at the clinic, and a guy come up to me, and he said, tell me the secret. Tell me the secret. How do you baptize 60-some people after one service? Not a revival, just a one service. I said, there is a secret. I'm not sure you can handle it. He said, oh, yes, tell me the secret. I said, well, I'm not telling you unless you get out paper and pen and write it down. I'm not going to waste my breath. So he got out a paper. He got out a pen. I said, write this down. If you're going to baptize 60 people after one service, there must be a minimum of 60 people in the room who have never been baptized. I'm not a genius, but I can figure that out. We're preaching to everybody who's already been baptized. We need to get out and preach to some people that haven't been baptized. We need to go out and find these people. One of the biggest people, group of people we can find is the children of lost adults. Go to the next slide. Here's what I call these, citizens of the kingdom who live as captives among the heathen. Hit the button again. Let me say it again. Citizens of the kingdom who live as captives among the heathen. Hit it again. Hit the button again. Citizens of the kingdom who live as captives among the heathen. I was preaching at a Pentecostal church one time, so send me to hell, excuse me. They asked me to preach. I still preach the truth no matter who's in the group. I was preaching along, telling them about this, and they were interested in this, and I got to this point, and before that, they were quite vocal. Have you ever been to a Pentecostal church? Yeah. They're quite vocal, almost distractive to a guy like me. I was raised in the Church of Christ. Son, listen, if God ever talked to me verbally, I don't know what I'd do. So I started getting into it, boy. You'd say something, and man, oh, boy, I was getting into it. I got to this dead silence. You know what they told me? The preacher got up afterwards and said, we don't believe what you just said. I said, what's that? He said, we don't believe that children of lost people are saved by God, that they're going to hell because their parents are going to hell. I didn't know they believed that. Let me tell you something what the Bible says, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Go research it. You are born into God's kingdom when he breathes breath into you. When you are conceived, you are God's child. And at some point, you must be born again. That's what the Bible teaches. If that is true, and I believe it to be true, the children who live with non-Christian adults are citizens of our kingdom. And if they are citizens of our kingdom, we have a responsibility to get the message to them. Let me tell you where I think we're missing it, besides those other minor things. That biggest group out there, the children, we're missing it. Now, George Barna, in a recent book called Turning Children to Champions or Champions Out of Children, something like that, he makes a statement that all of his adult life, he thought that the kingdom view ought to be among adults. He said that is the great myth of Christianity. The great myth of Christianity. He said kingdom work should be done with children because that is the future. He said we as the church have missed this point so badly. We haven't just missed the boat on this. He said we have missed the entire ocean. And I'm going to tell you, I agree with this man. We need to remember that the future of the church is in the hands of the children. And if we don't wake up and think about that, we are in trouble in just a few more years. Let me give you some math. I was preaching this last year down at the Kiyomishi Clinic, and the man who preached before me was named General George Sada. Some of you have heard of him. General George Sada was chief advisor to Saddam Hussein. He was a Christian all of his life. Don't have time to tell his story, but we love him because he came running to our side and saved over 100,000 American allied and Jewish troops by the information that he gave us. So we like him. He's a good guy. He said, listen, he said, here's where we're messing up. We're messing up in America in the church because the Muslims go after the children and Americans go after the adults. And for every one that we get in Christianity in the United States of America, he said, the Muslims are getting eight. All you have to do is do the math, and in a few years, we're going to be so outnumbered, we have no choice but to pick up a gun and shoot them. We got to do something about it before that happens, guys. The children is where we need to go. And if we don't focus on these kids and start pulling these kids in and teaching these kids and snatching these kids away from their heathen parents, we are going to lose this nation. I'm going to tell you something that we can do that I found out about. Change that slide, will you? Weekday religious education. Now, I'm going to tell you about this because this is one thing we can do. Let me ask you a few questions. How many of you would like to see your church be more involved in the Great Commission? I want a show of hands. Now, wake up out there. Carrying out the gospel. How many of you would like to be involved in a ministry where those who are most at risk are being reached? Those who are most at risk. Listen, Jesus was a most at risk kind of guy. Listen to me. He said, leave the 99 that are safe in the fold and go where? To that one. Jesus was a most at risk. Let me ask you this. How many would like to see your local congregation grow in a way it's never grown before? Anybody raise your hand. How many of you would like to see the kingdom of God as a whole advance forward? Raise your hand. How many of you finally would like to see this? How many would like to see America saved? I'm going to show you something that'll do all five things. And listen, if you're sleeping now, you better wake up. Because I'm going to show you something that'll do all five of those things. And it has to do with focusing on that biggest field out there, those children who are being held captive by heathens. Go to the next slide. Weekday religious education. I never heard of this. If I'd have heard of this, I'd have been on this like ugly on a gorilla. I never heard of it. I asked Judge Moore when I was way out. I said, I don't want to take a lot of time. I want to ask you a question. Tell me about release time religious education. He said, it's legal. We fought it in the courts. I know all about it. He knows all about that. When the public education system started in the United States of America, I did not know this. I confess my ignorance. There were those who went to the federal government and said, what about our children? We're teaching them religion in the school. What are we going to do about this? That's back in the 1800s, guys. And they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make it federal law that if you have a child in the public government school, that you as a parent have a right to pull that child out of that school up to 2 hours a week for religious training of your choice, and you cannot count that child absent or punish them in any way for being gone. That is federal law, United States of America. Who knew that? Two people, three. Rest of us didn't know that. Maybe we ought to do like Judge Moore says and get back, start studying a little bit. Federal law. So I go to this little teeny county in Owen County in Indiana. I'm preaching for this little church. I didn't mean to. It was by accident. I was ex-directing the Christian Contender Ministries, and this little church said, our preacher left. Would you come and preach? I said, sure. What kind of church are you? They said, well, we was a Methodist church for 100 years. Now we're a Baptist church. I said, well, I ain't a Methodist or a Baptist, but I'll be glad to come and preach for you. So I went over and preached one sermon. I figured, well, that won't last. They won't invite me back because I gave them everything I got with both barrels. And they said, well, could you fill in the rest of the month? I said, well, a few people are nuts enough to have me. So I've been filling in for 4 weeks, going on 9 years. 90 days, they said, you know, we kind of get the impression from you that God's word says we ought to take Lord's Supper every Sunday. And they had a board meeting and voted, unanimous vote by the congregation, that they start taking Lord's Supper every Sunday. I'd like to just tell you that story. Then now it's in the bylaws. Faith, repentance, confession, baptism. Only thing that can be taught for a plan of salvation in that church from now on. It's called a community church right now. We're working on that. Had a 2-year study on leadership. Brother Jackie helped us with that. We got elders and deacons for the first time. Elders know their job. Evangelist who knows his. We know each other's job. And we leave each other alone. Let us do them. So I'm in this little church, and a lady comes up, and she says, our weekday religious education teacher quit, and we need some help. Would you guys take it? We went over there. Long story short, went through the whole deal. Here's what we found out they was doing. They were going to the public elementary school. They were taking children out of the public elementary school by permission of their parents during the school day, not before school, not after school, when there's lots of conflict, during the school day. Listen, if Johnny's got to skip basketball to come to this, he ain't going to do it after school. But if he gets to skip math, he's in. I'm just telling you, Johnny, I know Johnny. And they're bringing these kids out of the public school. They're teaching them a Bible lesson, taking them back to the public school. And they said, would you take that over in this school? And I went, that ain't legal. They said, well, we don't think it's legal either, so don't tell nobody. So we said, we'll take it over. We start working with this. I do some research. I find out it's legal. So as soon as I find out it's legal, I open my big mouth, start telling everybody. It isn't long till the organization that's doing it calls Christian Contender Ministries and said, we want to hire your ministry to revamp this whole program in our whole public school system. So we worked on that. Several of the schools were getting ready to cancel it. We went around and talked to them all. Long story short, here's what happened. Last year, every week at all four elementary schools. We went to the public school, took over 600 children every week all through the school year, 9 months, took them off of the school property, taught them about Jesus, took them back to the school, and put them back in their regular classes. 600 kids a week, legally. Now listen to me. If every school in America did that, we could change America. So I'm on a campaign to tell people about this. Indiana Code, Title 20, Education, Attendance, Public School Children, Religious Education. When the parent of a child who's enrolled in public school makes a written request, the principal may permit that child to attend school for religious instruction, which is conducted by a church or association of churches by an association which is organized religious instruction incorporated under the laws of Indiana. If a principal grants permission for the child to attend a school for religious instruction, he shall specify the period of periods not to exceed 120 minutes in the aggregate in any week for child to receive this instruction. Permission to attend a school of religious instruction shall be valid only for the year which it is granted. Decisions made by the principal under this section may be reviewed by the superintendent of the school corporation. Switch the slides there. A school for religious instruction which receives pupils under this section under the maintain attendance records and allow inspection of these records by attendance officers. A pupil who attends a school for religious instruction under this section shall receive the same attendance credit which he would receive for attendance in the public schools for the same length of time. A school for religious instruction should not be supported in whole or in part by public funds. Check with the Department of Education. Your state, every state in the union, has a similar code. That is the law. We, as the New Testament restoration churches, need to jump all over this. Nobody else is. A handful. We need to get all over this. We need to go in every school in America and start this program. Weekday religious education. Move the slide. Go ahead. Switch slide. There's kids getting Bibles. Move the slide. Go ahead. We're going to get through this. More kids receiving Bibles. Now listen to me. 70% of these kids, their parents never take them to church ever. Not Christmas, not Easter. These are citizens of the kingdom that we can reach. Move the slide. Weekday religious education. Let's stop right there. Back it up one if you can. I wish I could tell you. My job, eventually after training a bunch of people, got down to riding the bus as a volunteer on Wednesday to pick up children from four grades to bring them on four different trips to our building where they could have this class. And I would ride that bus. While I was riding that bus, we had memorized verses. We had memorized 10 Commandments. First time we started memorizing the 10 Commandments, we was having kids quote them on the bus, and one kid says, "Now, Brother Artie, you quote the 10 Commandments." Well, I could come up with it, but the teacher said it had to be in order. I said, "I'm going to do that for you next week." The next week, I learned the 10 Commandments, buddy, so I could say them, and they'd say them backwards. I'd say them backwards, man. I had those 10 commandments down so good, one kid said, "Start in the middle, go both ways." I could do it right in order, man. So I got the kids that are ready to quote the 10 commandments up to the front. The bus driver's driving, and I've got kids saying it. Little Jacob, he's fifth grader. He jumps up and says, "I want to say them, Brother Artie. I got them." He stood up right there on the bus. He rattled off 10 commandments, didn't even take a breath. Had the whole thing done, buddy. He was so happy. I said, "Jacob, I'm going to put your name down. Because if we put their name down and they said the 10 commandments, we give them a yard sign they could put in their yard with the 10 commandments. Isn't that cool?" Now, these kids get those yard signs. Listen up now. They get those yard signs. They take them back to school. The teacher don't want them in the classroom, so she sets them out in the hallway. So any given day, we can walk down any school in our county, and there's the 10 Commandments. 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 It ain't on the wall. It's on a sign leaning against the wall that's owned by one of the children and not against the law to be there. So then we got smart. We gave them all a t-shirt with the 10 Commandments on the front of the t-shirt. Over 40% of the kids in the elementary school, when they had their school picture taken, had it taken with that t-shirt on. My grandpa used to say, there's more, and I don't have any idea why you'd ever skin a cat. I've never figured that out. But if you do, there's more than one way to do it. Oh, Jacob. I said, "I'm put your name down, Jacob." He said, "I've already got my sign." He said, "I just wanted to say them." I thought, "Isn't that great?" And then he just sat down and started bawling. I put my arm around him and said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I got my sign." He said, "And I put it out in my yard." He said, "My stepdad, he said he didn't want that stupid sign in his yard. So he said, I moved it to the back," and he came home the next thing and said he didn't want that stupid sign in his backyard. He said, then he threw it away. He just bawled. I said, "Jacob, let me tell you a little story, son. It don't matter whether you got a yard sign that's got Ten Commandments written on it or not. What matters is that you got the Ten Commandments written on your heart. You can say them anytime you want to and nobody can take that away. Big old smile come on his face, man. He jumped up. He started quoting them again. Listen, we could change the world if we could get into that public school, and you ain't never getting prayer and Bible reading back in the public school the way it was before without a revolution. Well, how about doing it a different way? I must move on. Let me go to the next one. So then I go to the principal. The principal says to me, I'm having trouble with some of the kids. It's right before Christmas. He says, let me tell you why. He said, a lot of these kids, they get the free lunch program at school. And a lot of these kids know that for 2 weeks now through Christmas, they're not going to have a hot meal. And he said, they start to get rowdy. He said, wait till the end of the year. He said, the last 2 weeks is unbelievable because they know all summer long they're going to live on potato chips. Man, listen, we've been working with these kids. I couldn't handle it. So we went back to pray. God, we got to do something about this. So I went home and told my wife, and she said, well, you've got this horse ranch here that God had blessed you with, and we through some business efforts, and my son had started rescuing horses, and long story, you don't need to hear about it. And she said, you could just give this horse ranch to the Lord, and in the summertime, you could just have a day camp down on the farm, let those kids come out here, and you could teach them how to ride horses and tell them about Jesus. So we started that. Didn't have any money. We just started doing it. Switch the slide. And my wife had gone to work for the Department of Child Services and said something to it about her supervisor, whose supervisor came to me and said, listen, if you'll take all the foster kids in for that day camp, the state will pay you to do it. So I said, okay, I'll take their money. So we had money the first year, had a bunch of kids come out. That's just on one day. Go ahead and switch the slide. And we swam in the creek. Keep switching. Wouldn't you like to do that? We rode horses. Just stop it right there. We started this day camp. Well, the next year, and I'm going to tell you something I believe. I believe every church in America could have a day camp at their church building. You say, maybe I'm nuts, but I'm going to tell you this. These kids went home to their parents and said, I'd like to go to weekday religious education. You know what those heathen parents said? Why much does it cost is all they wanted to know. When we said it was free, they signed for every one of their kids to get to go. I said, I wonder if that'll work in the summertime. I sent permission home slips home. You know what these heathen parents did? If you'll watch my kid all summer long for free, you can have him. That's how we can do it. They're letting us have him. But we got to get down to doing some work and serving. We got to get out of our office and we got to get down where the people are. We got these horses, rescue horses, like horses, and the kids ride the horses, so we started feeding them. The next year, switch the slide. The next year, that's my granddaughter. You can look at her for a while. Next year, go ahead. The next year, the state came to me, stop right there, and the state said, we can't give you any more money. We don't have any money. So I said, well, just tell them to come anyway, and they did. So now we got to go back and pray again. Isn't that where it always starts? So we go back and pray, and we say, God, how are we going to feed these kids? My wife's reading the paper. She clips out an article. She gives it to me. It says, there's a free lunch, reduced lunch program at school. If anybody will do this during the summertime, the federal government Department of Agriculture will provide the funding through the State Department of Education. If you're willing to cook meals for children that need food, we will pay for the food, and we will pay for somebody to cook the meals, and we will pay administrative costs. And I went, wait just a minute. That's tax money. I called them up, and they said, y'all come up to the meeting. In the meeting at the State House, I said, listen, I teach them about Jesus. They said, we don't care what you teach them. They said, if you'll get these kids and let them come and eat, we will fund that, and you can teach them whatever you want. Now I had a source to feed them. Your taxes. Now somebody's going to stop me back there and say, I can't believe you're hooking up with them dirty, rotten bureaucrats, taking our tax money to feed them kids. Shut up. Get out of my face. Don't waste your time. I'm bigger than you. What's wrong with us? Is everything about America wrong? No. There's some things that are still good. And they waste a lot of our tax dollars. But I'm going to tell you, the best people I know to spend tax dollars is Christian people. If they said they'll give me money to spend to feed hungry children, and they don't care if I tell them about Jesus, I will take their money. Oh, what about the strings? I ain't had any strings in 3 years. They called me up on the way home, Brother George, on my cell phone. And they said, Mr. Carnes, we don't know if you know this or not, but as a nonprofit, not only can we provide food to feed your kids that come to your day camp all summer long, but you can open up 25 places anywhere you want in the state of Indiana where children can come and get a free meal. I said, well, if I did that, I'd tell them about Jesus and I'd pray. They said, we don't care. So I got back to the church and I got up and told people at the church, hands went up, said, I'll take Patricksburg, I'll take Gosport, I'll take Paragon, I'll take Spencer. And by that summer, we got started, and we had four other places where any kid in the county could go get a free lunch 5 days a week, and all the time they were eating lunch, there was prayer and Bible study and Bible stories going on, and it was paid for by the Department of Agriculture, your federal tax dollars at work. There are ways to get this done, gentlemen, if we will wake up and pray and then go out and expect God to do amazing things. I don't know about you, but I think that's pretty amazing. So now we started again this year with the same program. We opened up 8 places to feed kids. Now listen, we're just a small little ministry of which I'm the ex-director. An 11 weeks of free day camp. We had 70 kids enrolled in that day camp. 70% of those kids were from parents who never take them to church. We opened up 7 other places to feed kids. 16,000 hot meals to children this last summer up there in our area. And Bible stories and prayer for every child paid for by the United States of America. God bless America! When you pray, go out and do, and God will do amazing things among you. I'm going to tell you about a little girl who came to that day camp. I got a note from her psychiatrist. Got an eating problem. She hoards food. Mother died. No father. Foster care. 4 years. Don't put food out. She'll take it. So they dropped her off. They said, you got to put that food away. She'll take it. I said, leave that food where it is. She went up there, got her backpack, started putting food in it. She was hiding food all over the building. I said, what are you doing? She said, oh, I'm just collecting up some food. And some of my staff said, what's wrong with her? I said, nothing wrong with her. Not a thing wrong with her. A wolf will store up food because it knows maybe there'll be a day when they don't have any. She's in foster care, bouncing from home to home. Sometimes they pick her up. She can't even go to the bedroom, get her stuff. That when they pick her up, that family hadn't fed her supper. They take her to another family. That family doesn't know she hadn't had supper. She gets nothing to eat. She collects up food. She's at least as smart as a dog. Don't take a psychiatrist to figure that out. So I said, bring me another backpack. Zoe needs some more food. I started packing up one with her. I'd carry packed food every place we go. Barn, didn't matter where it was. We had the food. And we had plenty of food. She never ate any of it. She just wanted it. So one time I took her down to the barn after a week or so, and I said, see this little horse over here? His food's in that room, and he's in that stall, and somebody needs to take his food to him, and he won't get to eat. She said, I'd like to do that. She started taking food to that little pony twice a day when she was out at day camp. You know, within a week, she was leaving those backpacks up at the tabernacle. Within another week, she wasn't packing them anymore. By the end of that summer, she wasn't hoarding food anymore. Got a report back from the psychiatrist at the end of the summer. Said, I've been working with her for 4 years. I don't know what's happened, but I know the best thing that's ever happened to this child is the time she spent out at Rock Haven Ranch, especially their equine integrated behavioral therapy program. I didn't even know we had one. We're just picking up poop and riding horses. I didn't know it had a name. This is her 3rd year to come to day camp. She told me this year, she said, you know, Brother Artie, in 2 more years, I'll be old enough to be a helper. And she said, when I grow up, she said, I'm going to start a camp just like this so I can help children like me. Listen, they're out there. Every year we have to start with, this is prayer. This is a prayer clinic, isn't it? We got to start. Why? Because we got 70% of the kids don't go to church. Some of them never heard a prayer. So every year, first meal, I got to say, guys, we're going to pray. This is what prayer is, talking to God. You know how it all goes. So I pull my hat off. To take your hat off. We're going to pray. This one little boy, 5th grade in the back. He said, you can't talk to God, can you? I said, oh, yeah. I said, prayer, talk to God. He said, really? I said, yeah. I said, I'm going to show you how to do it. Buddy, he was excited. So I pulled my hat off, prayed, put my hat back. He thought that's the coolest thing he had ever seen. Next day, fifth grader. I said, we're going to pray again this morning for breakfast. Would any of you children like to pray? Same boy says, you mean children can talk to God? I said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I called one of the little boys up from our church, Ryan. And I said, Ryan, why don't you lead the prayer this morning? That little boy was standing out there just like his one eye open. But he saw that little 10-year-old boy praying, and he was a 10-year-old boy, and he thought, man, that is the coolest thing I have ever seen in my life. He was excited. The next day, gospel truth, I pulled off my hat, and I said, who'd like to have the prayer this morning? That boy said, I'll do it, and he come up. This is only the third day you ever heard about prayer. Now he's praying. We could change America, guys, if we just learned how to do it. We're out riding horses later on. He asked me, he said, Brother Artie, can you pray anywhere or just here at this ranch? He didn't know. He didn't know. One of our precious citizens of our kingdom didn't know. I said, listen, buddy, you can pray anywhere you want, day or night. God never sleeps. He'll hear you. He looked right at me and said, Brother Artie, he said, my daddy comes home after he's been drinking a lot. And when he comes home after he's been drinking a lot, he said, it's really bad. He said, you think I could pray then? Precious citizens of our kingdom who don't know. Listen, there's ways to get things done if you'll get them done. So we started praying. We said we need WRE programs all across America. Do you agree with that? We need day camps and churches all across America. Do you agree with that? We need to feed hungry children all across America and tell them about Jesus. You agree with that? Somehow we got to get this word out, God. Somehow we got to train people. Somehow, you know, and I just can't sleep at night. And I'm praying, and my wife's praying, and everybody's praying. And we're trying to figure out how to do it. So we said, we're going to build some cabins and have some training facilities here. And we don't have any money. Somehow we're going to do this. I get a call from a guy in Florida. Switch the slide. There's kids eating. Switch the slide. I get a call from a guy in Florida. My father-in-law, Jackie Miller. He said, I've met a man down here 3 years ago, Christian man from New Testament Church, and he's looking for some help. He sold his business about 6 years ago for millions. I can't tell you the whole story. There's not time. He decided to put millions in a foundation that he could use for the kingdom of God through the New Testament Christian churches and churches of Christ. He decided to buy a place called the Glades Resort. Go ahead and switch the slide. T's missing. And here's what he decided to do. He bought this rundown RV park. He's put millions in it and fixed it up, called the Glades Resort. He changed the name. And his idea was this. I'll fix this up, and then I'll give it to the New Testament churches, and they can use it as a business that will produce money every year, and then we'll put all that money into Christian work, and at the same time, we'll build a retreat center. That was his idea. He went to some of our colleges. He went to some of our groups, could not get anybody to help him with this project. So he called, Jackie called, he said, I told him that you might could talk to him. He sent me some plane tickets, me and my wife went down there. Now here's a short story of it. Christian Contender Ministries has now worked out a partnership. Hit the slide. We're going to develop a Christian RV community down in Florida. It's already there. It's been evaluated and assessed at $30 million worth of assets. $30 million worth of assets. It's all fixed up and ready to go. The second thing we're going to do, switch the slide. Establish a renewable source of funding for Christian causes. Switch the slide. And at the same time, we're going to build a Christian retreat center down there that all of our brotherhood can use. Are those good ideas? Anybody think that's a good idea? We don't have to raise one dime to do it. He said, I got the money to do all that if you'll come help me do it. He said, I've been looking at your ministry. I like what you do. You need to do the same thing in Florida. We could build a retreat center and train people and send them out to do all of that stuff, and it's already funded. Now, I don't know about you, but I think we ought to give God praise for that. Switch the slide. He started an organization called Church Planting Ventures. Some of you have heard of it. Go ahead and switch the slide. They started 24 churches and established in major cities with over 200 attending each congregation. Church switch. They also gave well over $1 million to loyal Bible colleges. One college received $1 million from this foundation. Go ahead. Hundreds of thousands given to missions and apologetic resources. Go ahead, next slide. Hundreds of thousands given to benevolent causes that feed and clothe children. Go ahead and switch the slide. Here's the current project. Hit the button. To establish a profitable business that will benefit the kingdom while at the same time fund Christian causes with renewable annual income resource. Go ahead, hit the slide. Thus, the Glades Resort. Keep going. We're just going to look at these pictures. Here's the entrance. Office. Keep going. Signs. Cabins. Golf. Nine hole regulation golf course. He's going to give it to us. Did you get that? Anybody get that besides me? I never played golf. So I went took some golf lessons from a deacon in our church. He said, keep your head down. Look at the ball. He said, when you hit the ball, don't look at the ball. He said, keep your head right there. I started doing that. After the second bucket, 8 out of 10 times I was hitting it over 200 yards straight down the fairway. 8 out of 10 times. He said, how do you do that? I said, I just imagine the devil's face on that ball. And I just imagine he's laughing at us right now. And I know somebody's laughing because Artie's going to play golf. If you could play golf on a horse, I'd be all for it. And I just imagine him laughing, and I just stare right at him so he doesn't know what's coming. And I put the devil's face on there, and I swing, and I just hit that thing as hard as I can. He said, you're getting 8 for 10, over 200 yards, straight down the fairway. Maybe that's a golf tip, I don't know. 9-hole golf course, keep going. Heated swimming pool, keep going. Restaurant, see that bar right there, over 100 years old. Brad Pitt's getting ready to make a movie. He sent his movie crew 4 times. Look at that bar in that room. Caloosahatchee River, you go west. It's on the Intercoastal Waterway, Gulf of Mexico. You go right, Lake Okeechobee, best bass fishing in America. Marina, somebody he had work with him. Caloosahatchee Ranch is what they call the retreat center. We're going to change the name to Rock Haven South. After 6 or 8 months of doing this, everybody wanted to sell the park and just build the retreat center. And he said, if you do that, you kill your goose that lays a golden egg. If you run the park, make it a Christian park, then you have a renewable source of income every year. He said, so you got to have somebody who knows something about business. And I've been in business most of my preaching life. Go ahead. Got a rodeo arena. Hold a rodeo there for a local rodeo association. This is on the retreat center property. Got bleachers. Keep going. Here's a rodeo arena. Keep going. Keep going. This is the foundation and slab already in place, and the money's already there to build that building. 14 rooms and a conference room with a kitchen. It's already there. I just got to go down there and build it. Did you hear what I said? I was praying to God for a way to find a place where we could have a training center to go out and do these things. Look at his answer. The Lord is doing amazing things among us, brothers. Keep going. Keep going. Next slab, already in place, ready for the building. Next building, right there, for offices and conference rooms and whatever else. Keep going. Let me ask you if this is a great idea. A place where Christians in retirement can have a fellowship with those of like precious faith and be involved in continuing Christian service. Is that a good idea? Is that a good idea? Who goes to Florida anyway? Thousands of us from the New Testament Christian churches, Churches of Christ. Why not all go together and work for the Lord while we're there? Keep going. Here's a better idea, that net profit, so the money you spend, you know the profit's going to be added to the foundation to support Christian ministry. Keep going. Annual renewable income source for supporting ministry all around the world. How's that for a good idea? The only problem is if I go do this, I can never put any of the money in my pocket. Who lines up for a hard work with no pay but fools like us? I mean, you can pay salaries and whatever, but once there's a net profit, it's got to go to the Lord's work. It's already been set up that way. I don't have time to give you all the facts and figures, guys, but listen to me. All we got to do, if it has 200 people there, he had 160 last year with no advertisement. This year we got 178 already booked. I haven't even promoted it yet in the Christian churches. Once we hit 200, we're profitable. Once we fill the place up, there's a potential of $2 million a year. Anybody could use some money? Not just once, but every year while we're together doing Christian work. Next slide. It's an even better idea to have a Christian retreat center. Next slide. A place built in conjunction with the RV resort that'll train, equip, and send out workers into the world for the kingdom. Go ahead and hit the next slide. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. God answers prayer. And God is still doing amazing things among us. If we will consecrate ourselves, and if we will pray as a part of that, and then get out tomorrow, the Lord will do amazing things. I don't have a lot here for you, except if you're interested in starting a weekday religious education program, I've got a couple of booklets here that give you some of the details, all the laws, all the facts and figures. I don't want profit for this. What they cost me to put together, if you'll pay me what it costs to put together, I got about 20 sets of that. If you don't get a set, you get a hold of me and I'll get you a set. I'm going to tell you this, guys. I haven't given up. I'm not going to sit around and wait for the Lord to come back. I think we can still accomplish great things with the power of the Lord. I think God's still on the throne. I don't care who the president is. I think God's still on the throne. I don't care who anybody else says, what anybody else says. God is still in charge of this thing, and we're on his side. And if we'll partner up with him, with God, all things are possible. Thank you for letting me speak.